Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort. Jim, this is the week when I'm most jealous of you, because you get to be at the Masters all week, that beautiful golf course, the nature of it, the up and down. Do you walk the course while you're down there, Jim, and do you get a pretty good workout doing it?
Yes and yes. I try to walk the course as much as I can. Really, practice rounds like today, early rounds, I try to be out there as much as possible just to get, try to give people who read my column something they can't get off TV or from a commentator. Try to get my own sights and sounds. If there's a local angle, I try to follow that person. Really, the only local-ish angle this week is Eric Van Rooyen, who's a former golfer from South Africa. I try to get as much of the experience as I can, partly for selfish reasons. I want to be out there, partly for my readers. And it is one of the things you don't get off TV. It's an incredibly hilly course, and it's a challenging walk. I think a lot of casual sports fans don't think of golfers as great athletes. But I tell you what, you want to walk, whatever it is, 5 miles a day, up and down hills, pausing to hit very precise shots while keeping your breathing and your heart rate under control, and making very slick 5-foot putters with steady hands. That is a quite unique challenge.
No doubt. It's that part of it that you just described. I mean, there's some elevated greens where they're making a 100-foot walk or so up, maybe even larger. And then to relax and putt on the slickest greens in golf, a lot of times that is a challenge.
It is. And I've played the course too. And, they don't have carts here. You walk with a caddy and you feel it in your legs. And the last few holes, even if you're in really good shape, your legs are going to be a little fatigued, and that affects the way you swing the club too.
Yeah. Everybody's going to be watching Tiger. I don't know if he has practice round plans or not. Maybe he's going to save it up for the actual competition. What have you heard about when you might see Tiger this week?
He was at the course yesterday. I got here last night. I got to the course this morning. He was here yesterday. He's practicing today. I think he was playing a practice round earlier. I've been busy in the media center for most of the day. I did go out and watch Eric Van Rooyen play a few holes. Mm-hmm. I did not see Tiger yet. But let's just keep our expectations within the realm of reasonableness. Last time he really tried to compete here, he couldn't get it. It's like he might at best have one good round in him. Mm-hmm. For all the reasons we've just talked about, his legs, his feet, all the problems he has, they're just not going to hold up over 4 days. They might not hold up for over 2 days.
I hope it doesn't turn out to be ceremonial for him, but it's going to be pretty tough to walk that course. I've heard he has zero movement really in his right ankle because of the crash he had.
Yes. So you add that car crash to the problems he has already had with his knees and his back, his age. Obviously, the interesting thing about, one of the many fascinating things about Tiger as a young golfer, Jack Nicklaus, we're talking about the two greatest players of all time, Nicklaus and Woods, both big, strong guys. But Nicklaus had, kind of natural weight, and sometimes he even had a gut, and he knew how to move through the ball in kind of an effortless way, and he used his mass and gravity to really drive the ball. Tiger was always kind of your more modern, overtrained, explosive athlete. And not only did he train like crazy, but he really snapped. One of his power sources was he snapped his left knee vertical. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the way he snapped into his shot. That's what gave him that extra power. And that just was never going to hold up. And it was never going to, and the way he swung clubs was never going to hold up his back either. It's kind of like all the baseball players we talk about, the high incidence of injuries in Major League Baseball. Well, these aren't chubby guys who take 3 months off in the off season and work their way into spring training and drink beer and smoke cigarettes after games and have a little bit of extra fat on them and don't have hamstrings they're going to tear. You know, when you train for explosiveness, you do put yourself in a position where your body's not going to hold up long term.
Yep, and that has certainly been the case for Tiger. We'll talk Masters all week with Jim, of course. Your column this morning, Jim, about the Vikings and their draft plans. It's almost as though everyone has just assumed that they traded for that 23rd pick to package it and move up in the draft, but you kind of present a different idea that could happen.
Well, and I do think they traded for that draft pick to move up. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, I don't think you give up draft capital unless you really feel like you have the urgency to move up.
Mm-hmm.
But we can never be 100% sure we know what Kwesi's thinking. And there is at least a chance worth considering that he wanted the option to move up, but he's only going to move up for the right price and if he can get the right quarterback. And there is also the possibility that Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix will end up being as good as two or three of the top four that everybody's, you know, willing to trade up to get. And if you came to the conclusion that Penix Jr., for example, is about as good as McCarthy or May, well, you certainly could build a better team by taking Penix if he comes through and is that player, and using the other pick for a top defensive player and keeping your future draft capital. I mean, if you trade both these first two picks and a future pick, high pick, to go up and get McCarthy or May or something like that, man, that quarterback better be great or you really overspent.
Mm. And it doesn't seem as though Penix is getting that type of rating around the NFL, at least so far. But we don't really know until the draft happens. I mean, and somebody actually has to make the pick of the quarterback.
That's right. And there are so many mock drafts done, and it's such an industry now.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I'm not ripping on people who do the mock drafts. The good ones work really hard at it, develop sources, make their own evaluations. You know, they're trying to predict the future, and that's always hard to be. But we just have to remember there's a difference between what people speculate in mock drafts mm-hmm. and what NFL teams actually believe internally. And at this time of the year, you can't really believe any sources on what that information is. I mean, right now we're hearing McCarthy might go top three or top four. But we would, you know, and we're pretty comfortable saying Caleb Williams is going to go number one. We're pretty comfortable saying Jaden Daniels is going to go number two.
Mm-hmm.
But do we really know what's going to happen at three or four?
And we don't really, and that's not even Viking fans. I'm just looking at the poll on your newspaper's website. Almost 4,500 votes, and it's really split. I mean, even the fans themselves aren't all in agreement on what should happen, which puts even more pressure on the Vikings to get this right, because they're going to make somebody unhappy with what they do and make others happy.
Yeah, and you know, when you're in sports management, you value fans, but the last thing you do is listen to them.
Yeah.
You cannot make a move for temporary popularity. You got to make the move that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, people are going back and say, oh, you were right about that.
Yeah. And fans are telling the Vikings what to do now anyway, according to your poll, because they don't know either at this point. Kind of a tough start to the season for the Twins offensively. I really thought, and it still certainly could be, an outstanding offense, but they're struggling right now.
Terrible. Just terrible at bats. And listen, you know, if they were hitting line drives and people are making, you know, having unlucky contact or whatever, that'd be one thing. But they are taking terrible at-bats with runners in scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
They have runners on third, and they're taking called third strikes down the middle. They're, you know, it's been awful to watch. And part of it is Royce Lewis is their best player, their best hitter,
yep.
And he's the guy who, in clutch situations, will change his approach to match the situation. What you're seeing from Julian, from Wallner, from so many of these guys right now is, I'm going to swing for the fences no matter the situation. And if that means striking out, then I'm just going to hope that the home runs eventually make up for it. I just don't think that's the right approach. We all know that the analytics say you need to drive the ball to have value. But not with a runner on third base and less than two outs. Then you need a fly ball or a ground ball through the infield or a ground ball that they can't handle. It's a situational game, and they are not playing situations offensively right now.
Yeah. South Carolina, bigger, faster, stronger at each spot. They just had the better team last night.
And deeper.
Yep.
You know, and Caitlin Clark had an incredible first quarter, but South Carolina will wear you out and wear you down. Mm-hmm. The talent, the depth, the coaching, the aggressiveness, the physical play. There was just such a small – I mean, Caitlin Clark was going to have to make, like, 8 27-footers
yep.
for Iowa to have a chance. And Tessa Johnson of St. Michael. Albertville, great freshman player, and one of the many reasons South Carolina will continue to be a great college basketball team.
Yep, they just had too much firepower last night. Jim, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Sue and Jim at the Masters all week in Augusta. Here on KWLM.